Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Wednesday, hump day, middle of the week. Looking back on yesterday's inauguration, the festivities and celebrations and rituals are still continuing in Washington, D.C. and all across the country. In fact, I got an email invitation to attend a local here in Hawaii inauguration party for Barack Obama. I didn't go. It didn't look like it was going to be that big of an affair anyway. They didn't even have a pedestal to put Barack Obama up on should he happen to actually show up. And they were asking for a lot of money at the door anyway. So I took a pass on that. A lot of stuff happening. Before we get into it, of course, this is a live show today. The phone number is 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. Grab the phone. Dial a number in. I keep saying dial. They don't have dials on phones anymore. Punch the buttons. Donovan is answering the phones today and flogging the giant mutant hamster. So call in if you hear anything you feel you must respond to. We're going to go back to talking about the economy at the top of the show. I know we kind of let that slide during the recent hostilities and ongoing hostilities in Israel and Gaza. It's not 100% certain that it's really over yet. But today, the Dow Industrials rebounded from the rather precipitous drop they experienced yesterday. They started high, then they went down, then they rebounded back up again today and finished 279 points up. It's back in the 8,000s. Remember that little totemic 8,000 number I keep telling you all about. If the Dow is ever stuck in 7,000 for a week, it's going to trigger some real panic selling. So it got back up in there. This despite some continuing very, very bad economic news. Unemployment is hurtling toward the 2 million mark, as record numbers of people are laid off work. And if you go to our website, whatreallyhappened.com, you'll see more and more stories about this company's letting people go, that company's letting people go. Warner Brothers, where I used to work when I lived in Los Angeles, they're letting 800 people go. They're putting a hiring freeze, even on positions they need to fill. They're being told you can't have them. And so it's just really locking down. And remember, that 2 million number, that is just people who have just now filed for unemployment benefits and doesn't include people who have run out of benefits. They're no longer counted as unemployed. They're in a different category. It's not counting those people who have simply given up looking for work and they're just, you know, out back trying to grow food in their backyards and things like that. So the numbers, you know, really kind of understate the true severity of the problem here. Meanwhile, over in Iceland, and I have to say congratulations to the Icelanders. They are very courageous people. They have been pelting the Prime Minister's car with eggs and rotted vegetables. I guess nobody can afford fresh vegetables, but they're doing that. They apparently surrounded the Parliament building, attempting to prevent Parliament from seating. And this is the world's oldest sitting Parliament, is the Icelandic government. But now the people of Iceland are saying it is time for the government to step down and to allow the Icelanders to form a new government that is going to have better economic sense than the last one. And that is probably the beginnings of a phenomenon that we're going to see in a lot of other countries. We know we've had riots in Greece, and Ireland's in serious trouble, and just all over the place. I've lost track of all the nations that are having economically based riots here. And it's going to come here to the United States, because next month, just 2 weeks from now, when California's welfare checks stop arriving in the mail, you're going to see a lot of very unhappy people, and there's probably going to be some serious problems going there in the California situation. Meanwhile, we're hearing more and more people, you know, let's all feel sorry for the billionaires. They're committing suicide. We had one in up in Ireland. Ireland's in trouble right now. A certain Mr. Roca, I had his first name here, but I've mislaid the piece of paper. He committed suicide. We have the case of Marcus Schrenker, who tried to fake his own death, and he got caught out about that. And it's, you know, it is a very ugly situation out there, and it kind of makes you wonder just, you know, where is the bottom? And the bottom line is that nobody really knows, because the game they're playing is move the debt around. We know a lot of people are trying to hide the true scale of the debt. The banks and the investment brokerages are now saying, well, the way the accounting rules are written, it really makes it look worse than it really is. On the other hand, we will take a few billion dollars if you're handing it out to us for the bailouts. Now, a couple of statistics here. You know I get onto the manufacturing thing from time to time because I do not agree with this idea of bailout, of robbing the poor to give to the rich. I think it is basically, it's a fascist economic model where profits are privatized and the losses are socialized. That is the essence of a fascist economy. And we're seeing that in this country. The rich are allowed to keep their wealth, and when things go bad, they loot the people. And just to put this in scale, the U.S. government has borrowed on your behalf, and without your permission, I might add, more money in the last 4 months than has been spent on every war in America's history. And you are on the hook to repay it all. That's how out of control it is. So they're robbing the poor to give to the rich, and they're just putting this hideous future tax burden on you. And, you know, that your kids and grandkids are going to be slaving away to pay, and in the meantime, they're cutting back services, and they're having to say, well, you know, Social Security might not be there, and that's a problem that goes back to the Clinton years. And that's why we have Barack Obama talking about the new volunteerism, because the apparent attitude of the government now is that they're going to go on taking at least half, if not more, of everything you earn, but you're kind of on your own to take care of yourself and your neighbors. And if we're taking care of ourselves and our neighbors, why do we even need a government? You know, like the people in Iceland, maybe the government has kind of outlived its usefulness to we the people. Certainly very useful to the banks and investment companies, but how useful is it to us? Is it really more trouble and cost than it has become worth to us? Meanwhile, let's see, we're looking at 1 in 4 manufacturing jobs has vanished since 2000, and 40,000 factories have closed since 1998. And these statistics kind of validate what I'm saying about manufacturing, because it's one thing to just move the debt around and call that economic reform. But the real problem is we don't make products that people want to buy. We've turned money into the product. We take money and we bundle it and we tie it up and put a ribbon on it and some gold glitter and we stack it up in different shapes and we offer it around, you know, at interest, and then we package loans as mortgage-backed securities and we package those around. It's all this processing and all this interest on all this money that's flowing around, and it's all paper money. It's just printed up by the Federal Reserve. It's not real tangible assets, and yet it has become the dominant commerce of the United States. Is just moving numbers around by this complex set of rules in this gigantic open-air casino called Wall Street. That has become our primary business in this country. As you heard on this last news break, you know, GM is now selling fewer cars than the Asian automakers. In fact, I think GM's only sale for the last quarter is that huge limousine Barack Obama was riding around in yesterday. I think that's very, very expensive one-car sale. I think that's their entire bottom line for that entire quarter. So you've heard me talk about the manufacturing problem. We need to be making products that other countries don't know how to make, so they'll come to us. But they want them. And that's what will bring back our economy. If we don't do that, then all of the bookkeeping tricks in the world aren't going to save the United States any more than they saved Enron. It's the same mechanism. It's just a lot larger. And so it may take a little bit longer to become apparent. But the Federal Reserve is a gigantic pyramid scheme, a lot bigger than Bernie Madoff's, and it works only so long as they can find more borrowers, and people don't want to borrow anymore. The American people are far more responsible than the government. We know when to stop borrowing money. We put away the credit cards. We don't buy the big plasma screen TV on credit this time. We know we've reached our ability to pay. We can't print up new money the way the government does. So we stop borrowing, and the whole pyramid of the debt-based monetary system of the United States that we have had since 1913 is going to come crashing down and probably will bring the government with it. Now, a lot of people have been talking about Barack Obama's inauguration yesterday, and on that note, because the music just started playing, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, come back and talk about Barack Obama. We are going to cover some of the Israel-Gaza thing a little bit later in the show. If you'd like to join us on the air, it's 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. And before we get on to Barack Obama and the ongoing ritual of the inauguration this week, Donovan, in our control room, sent me a little reminder during the break about the media reporting that consumer spending is down and how this is now the cause of our decline in economies. So apparently, let's forget all about the U.S. government giving tax breaks to corporations to move high-paying manufacturing jobs overseas at a time when we were all struggling to keep up with our debt. Apparently, the fact that we the people, you, I, the guy next door, we're all being fiscally prudent, we're trying to live within our means, unlike the U.S. government, and because we're not going out and buying a bunch of stuff on credit anymore, is why the economy is coming apart. So it's all our fault for not living more recklessly. That seems to be the logic that we're getting from the banks and Wall Street. And I can see why they're saying that, because they're thinking solely in terms of the credit crunch and getting people to borrow more money. Because when you borrow more money, it allows the Federal Reserve to print more money. So the fact that we're not borrowing like crazy anymore is why we're in this huge, huge recession. And as I said before, the problem with the entire debt-based Federal Reserve monetary system is that it works only so, just like a pyramid scheme, just like a Ponzi scheme. It works only when you have an ever-enlarging base of new borrowers coming in at the bottom who are borrowing money in order to buy something from the next people up on the pyramid so that they can pay off their loans plus interest. And all money in the United States is a loan that carries interest. That's what a Federal Reserve note is. It's not really money. It is a unit of indebtedness. And once you understand that concept, you will understand why the economy literally cannot exist without the American people being put into hideous, back-breaking debt for their entire lives. The system depends on it. It's designed to function that way. If you have not seen it, go out on the internet and look for a video called Money as Debt. It's about 40 minutes long. And I will, after today's show, I will hunt that down and put it up on the main page at whatreallyhappened.com. You need to watch that video because it explains to you the real nature of banking in the United States and how we got to be that way and what an incredible scam it is. Also, if you have not read it yet, you need to get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, about how the Federal Reserve was forced on us all through underhanded chicanery by some very, very wealthy people who wanted a license to legally counterfeit American money. And that's how that came into business. Okay, now, the inauguration. A lot of people are trying to make a really big deal about the fact that Barack Obama was stumbling over the oath of office yesterday. And I got a ton of emails from people saying he's not really the president because he messed up the oath of office. And the bottom line is, you know, if you mess up the oath of office, it doesn't really make you ineligible to be the president because it is a formality. The being president is you won the election. Okay. Now, as it turns out, going back and looking at the actual oath word for word, the reason Barack Obama was having difficulty is that Barack Obama had memorized the correct oath of office. And it was the judge who was messing up and not putting the words in the correct place. And so the judge is misstating the oath. Barack is trying to adapt and say back what the judge is saying, even though what the judge is saying is wrong. And so this is a non-issue, and I'm addressing it just long enough to get that out of the way, because there are far more serious things we need to talk about Barack Obama. Before we do that, though, we've got a caller waiting on the line. We're going to go to Bill in Austin, Texas. Aloha, Bill. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Aloha. You're talking about jobs being shipped overseas. I used to do a lot of work at universities, and I noticed in the 70s when I'd be doing some work at the business school, they had all these specific rim initiatives and the government would pay you to disassemble your company and ship it overseas, and they've been doing that since like 76.
Yes, absolutely they have. This has been a 30-year process. This did not happen overnight. It accelerated during the last presidential administration because of all the tax credits that was going on. And it was, again, it was part of this whole globalization thing. But what all of the American business leaders kept forgetting is your employees are also your customers. And for the first few companies that did this, it was a windfall. They made lots of money because their costs went down and profits were still high and the stockholders were happy. But as more and more companies began to do this, then the available money to American workers went into a decline. Their lifestyle went into a decline. Our actual standard of living for 90% of the American population has declined tremendously since the 1970s and 1980s. And all of a sudden, people aren't buying stuff at the stores anymore. And the retailers are scratching their head and saying, what the heck happened here? And what the heck happened is, without an ability for the American worker to earn a decent wage or salary, we can't buy the stuff they're selling. And it doesn't get any simpler than that.
And I had something else happen, too. I went to an Army-Navy store for lunch mm-hmm. to get some ammo cans, just because I like to store things in them because they're waterproof.
Mm-hmm.
And there was people there already buying their stuff for the Obama brigades. I couldn't believe it. This is like the next day, and they're in there, and they were going to be buying all this other stuff, and I thought it was amazing.
Well, you know, like I said yesterday when we talked about this, I'm all in favor of volunteerism, and my wife and I volunteer for a lot of stuff in our local community. But volunteerism as a fashion trend is not going to last. And the people who are rushing up to say, I'm part of Obama's Pledge America or whatever it is, you know, they'll have burned out on it, you know, a month from now. It'll be fading out. People who are naturally into being volunteers, they already are, and they will continue to be. The ones who are rushing in to be part of this mass movement, you know, they're going to wear it on their sleeves for about a month or so, and then it'll kind of fade on that.
Like the fads do.
Yeah, it is. It's a fad. It's a political symbolic fad. And the real idea is that, you know, Barack Obama is going to be taking more taxes from you, giving less back. And he's going to say, well, you know, it's up to you to be taking care of these things. We called for volunteers. You were doing it. Then you let me down. And that's what they're going to say about 3-4 months from now.
Anyway, I just wanted to let you know about that old program and what I saw today. And I enjoy your show. And thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. And call in again and tell all your friends about the show. All right, so getting back to Barack Obama, and we're trying to get a read on just how real he's going to be relative to his promises going into office. Now, as you heard on the news break, he has started out by basically putting a freeze on all the White House salaries. Nobody gets a raise. I think that's perfectly appropriate in the current economic situation. And, you know, he has definitely issued executive orders to strike down some of the restrictions on we the people getting key documents from the U.S. government. Now, how real that will be remains to be seen, because when the Freedom of Information Act first went through, they put a couple of loopholes in it, which the government has very successfully used to block access to key documents. And, of course, one that goes right back to the founding of What Really Happened and the radio show relates to Vin Foster. And we'll talk about that when we come back from these words from our sponsors. So take a few deep breaths, drink some coffee, pick up that phone, punch those buttons, 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
When all this twist
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Just finishing up from before the break here. Yes, there's a Freedom of Information Act law that is supposed to make government transparent to we who pay all the bills. And certainly during the 8 years of the Bush administration, a great many more restrictions were placed on what information, what data we who pay for it all were allowed to look at. And it is our data. It's not the government's data. The government owns nothing. The government is a custodian, you know, with little overalls and a big thing of keys on the belt. They're taking care of our country. They work for us. They've gotten a little arrogant about it. We're going to have to deal with that somewhere down the road. So anyway, the Freedom of Information Act has a couple of loopholes, and one of the big ones is if the information given out would violate the privacy of an individual, then the freedom of then the information may be legally withheld. In a case that attorney Alan Favish took all the way to the United States Supreme Court, the Supreme Court ruled that photos which would have established whether there was or was not a second gunshot wound injury to the neck of Deputy White House Counsel Vincent Foster did not have to be released because it would have violated the privacy of the family, which is it's a heck of a reach. It's a heck of a stretch. And so we see these loopholes all the time. So while Barack Obama's talking about executive orders to make it easier for us to get information, and I got a whole list of documents I want to go after myself, it remains to be seen how real that will be. And the reason I'm being less than ecstatic about the news we're getting over, you know, what Barack Obama is doing is because we're already seeing a pattern where he'll say one thing, and when he actually does the follow through, it's not quite what we thought it was going to be. When Barack Obama was campaigning, he campaigned on promises to close Guantanamo and to bring our kids home from Iraq. And those were things that all Americans wanted, and it helped propel him into the White House. Well, he's just issued the executive order to close Guantanamo, or at least that portion relating to the prisons and the prisoner abuse. But the prisoners are not being released and they're not being sent home. They're simply being moved to other facilities. And Barack Obama is not ending the military tribunals. He is simply delaying them for 120 days, apparently, while these prisoners get situated in their new homes. So while the symbolic closing of Guantanamo is happening, it isn't actually changing the reality of what's being done to these prisoners, many of whom were simply shopped to the United States forces in Iraq for the reward money and haven't actually done anything at all. So, you know, this is not what we were thinking that Obama meant when he talked about closing Guantanamo. So now we get to his campaign promise about bringing our kids home from Iraq, which was definitely the biggie. That, you know, we were going to see an end to this insanity, an end to all these deaths. We were going to get our kids home. Now, we're hearing that what Obama actually means is he's going to bring the kids home from Iraq in 16 months. And this is basically consistent with that last second security agreement that the Bush regime arm-twisted the Iraq regime into signing. So Barack Obama isn't actually doing anything that was not already being planned. 16 months. It's a long time. It's more than a year. And the government of Iraq, and we're talking the government installed by the United States, the leaders we put in there in Iraq, are saying, there's no need to wait. Don't have to wait 16 months. You can go home now. We have no hard feelings if you want to go home now. And so I have to ask, with the Iraqi government and people wanting us to bring our kids home, with the parents and families wanting to bring our kids home, why is Barack Obama stretching it out to 16 months? What we should do is give the keys to Iraq back to the Iraqi people, apologize for the trashing of the Baghdad Museum, and tell them not to worry because that depleted uranium dust, it'll all go away by itself in about 4.5 billion years, and bring our kids home. Why is Barack Obama not doing this? Now, speaking of Barack Obama, we were joking earlier about that big armored Cadillac he was riding around in being most of GM's sales for the last quarters. And I commented yesterday that just all these uniformed police that just lined the parade route and gave a very, very negative impression of whether Barack Obama really trusts the American people or not. It turns out we got an interesting statistic. There were more uniformed security people protecting Barack Obama in Washington, D.C. during the inauguration than we have troops in Afghanistan. That's how completely over the top the security was. I remember Bush had to declare a state of national emergency in Washington, D.C. so that they could get some federal money to pay for all of this. And then FEMA showed up and said, we'll run it. And FEMA, as much as FEMA completely dropped the ball during Hurricane Katrina, they went completely overboard with this security for Obama's inauguration. And you have to wonder, why? What is Barack Obama worried about? At least during his inauguration, he's got the love of the American people and all of his supporters there. He should feel very safe. Even President Bush, on his second inauguration, walked part of the inauguration route. He didn't have to hide out in the little security car until after we began to realize just what he was doing. So, you know, that's a very worrying sign when the guy who's just getting the job is already living behind armored walls and armored glass and uniformed troops. That does not send a message of a government that trusts its own people very much. Anyway, moving right along, apparently the Department of Homeland Security is going to be housed in a psychiatric hospital now, which is good. I concur with that diagnosis. Maybe that they'll keep them in the little rubber room and we won't have to deal with them at the airports anymore, fondling our wives and our daughters and dropping our laptop computers. Now, there's been a story that has been floating around the net for the last couple of days. It started out as a claim that an entire Al-Qaeda cell had been wiped out by an outbreak of the Black Death, the bubonic plague. And when the story first broke, it just seemed so absurd, I didn't even run it at whatreallyhappened.com. It seemed silly, really. Now we're coming back today with a follow-up story that is now trying to say, Al-Qaeda is working with biological weapons, and they're getting ready to drop the Black Death on America, and they dropped a test tube, and they killed themselves off, and so forth and so on. And it sounds to me like this is more of that booga-booga that we get every once in a while, where the press is going to remind us that there's an Al-Qaeda out there, also known as the toilet, and fill our heads with all these dire warnings about what Al-Qaeda is going to do. Now, the phrase the Black Death and the plague, it's got a lot of emotional baggage attached to it. It's got good PR value. It's got good buzz. But the fact is that the Black Death is now an easily cured disease. That's why you don't get it anymore. It's still out there. Every once in a while it shows up in some of the poorest parts of the world. But here in the nations that Al-Qaeda is supposedly going to attack, it's, you know, shot in the arm with a needle, and you go home and you're fine. And because of what happened during the Great Plagues, modern society does not tolerate high-dense populations of rats and fleas. We keep our homes rat-free now. So while Black Death makes a really good headline, the reality is it's not going to be very practical as a terror weapon. It really isn't. So this is another PR ploy to try and remind us that there are terrorists out there, that we have to quail in fear before and run to the government and clutch onto their apron strings and say, save us from the nasty old terrorists. And, you know, it's just more of the same thing. Government can't actually do its function anymore. They're going to create enemies, or they're going to create a crisis like global warming, and then ask us to pay them to fix the non-existent problem. Reminds me of an old story about a guy standing in the middle of an intersection with his hands out. And they say, what are you doing? He says, I'm scaring away the wild elephants. And they say, this is not a wild elephant within 5,000 miles of here. And he says, see, it works. Give me $5. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the last segment of our show today. And before we get back into Israel and Gaza, Donovan sent a little message over the little text window that we have during the show here. It says, so I have allegations here that a local cosmetic surgeon is injecting botulism toxin into people. Should I report that to Homeland Security? It could be the precursor to a bioweapon attack. Oh, yes, absolutely. And while you're at it, I've got a bunch of local restaurants out here got the same thing floating around their kitchen. So we ought to... I'm kidding. I'm going to have the state of Hawaii's tourism department down on me. The food around here is very good, and I've got the waistline to prove it. Okay, anyway, getting back to Israel and Gaza, it is an ugly, ugly situation. We are hearing there are already repeated violations of Israel's declared ceasefire bombings, more white phosphorus. Israel is finally grudgingly admitting that, yeah, they may have used white phosphorus shells, and we're going to investigate it because we're not sure what happened. And, folks, this is the start of the, hey, we didn't mean to drop burning white phosphorus onto those little kids' defense. But the fact is that the IDF got those shells from the United States and deployed them into Gaza. They weren't just sitting around waiting to be picked up by the IDF troops. They were put on trucks. They were trucked into Gaza or trucked to the airfields from which the airplanes launched. That shows intent. They had the weapons. They loaded them onto their artillery and their aircraft, and they deployed them against mosques, residential units, United Nations schools, and the United Nations Distribution Center for Food Aid to the Palestinians. And by the way, even though there's a ceasefire on, Israel is still keeping the crossings, the checkpoints are still jammed up. They're not letting stuff through. They're not letting materials through. So the collective punishment goes on. The very activity that Israel committed to try and provoke this war in the first place continues. They're not letting in, they're letting hardly anything in there. Now, meanwhile, the International Atomic Energy Agency is opening an investigation into Israel's alleged use of depleted uranium munitions in the Gaza Strip. Now, depleted uranium is justified as a munition component because it is harder and denser than lead, and it therefore makes a more effective penetrator through armor. Here's the problem. When it is used, when the depleted uranium shell hits whatever it hits, it vaporizes, and you have all of this depleted uranium dust, which is still radioactive. It's an alpha emitter. If you eat it or you inhale it, you have this radiation source that is inside you for the rest of your life. It's got a half-life of 4.5 billion years, and it causes cancers and birth defects and leukemia and all kinds of other medical situations. Now, here's the situation. Nobody in Gaza had a tank. There were no bunkers. There were no hardened shelters. There was no justification for the use of depleted uranium munitions by the Israelis against targets in Gaza. It appears that the only reason was to shower depleted uranium onto the Gazan people as yet another way to make them sick and kill them off in the long term. And so the IAEA is going to be investigating this. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, why did Israel do all this stuff? Why did Israel just act so outrageously? And there's an interesting theory that's been put out there, and it may have some merit. But if it's true, it has backfired hideously. This theory is saying that Israel calculated that it would be to their advantage, especially after losing in Lebanon in 2006, that Israel decided it wanted to put out an image of being completely militarily crazy to all of its neighbors in the Middle East. That if they went into Gaza on these flimsy pretexts and they just killed a bunch of people and women and children and bombed and firebombed everything, that the other nations in the immediate vicinity would be more afraid of Israel, and Israel would have an advantage in negotiations and deals and threats and so forth and so on, which can make sense. Where Israel appears to have made a mistake was the assumption that they could confine this image of a crazy, warmongering, rogue nation with nuclear weapons to just that part of the world, and that everywhere else, whether it was in Europe or the United States, that a complacent, obeisant, if you will, media would put out Israel's, oh, we want peace, it's those darned Palestinians who are causing all of this, and there are no civilian casualties, as Tzipi Livni kept saying, there's no humanitarian crisis, and that we would all just believe it, because that flashing light on the TV screen would hypnotize us and we would accept what we were told. Well, wrong. And once again, this illustrates that the people who are in charge of these governments, whether it's Israel or the United States, they're a bunch of old Cold War fossils who still think that the world operates the way it did back in the 1970s and 1980s when media was one way. And it would simply, we will put this on the network nightly news, it will go out, everybody will believe us, and that will be the end of it. And if there's anybody out there who knows that we are lying, what can they possibly do? Well, obviously, we're not living in the 1970s and 1980s anymore. We're at the start of the 21st century. This is the age of the internet and the blogs. And the weak point in all of the plans that we have seen coming down from the Israeli government and the United States government is a complete failure to understand that the flow of information within society has fundamentally changed. It is as radical a revolution as that which accompanied the invention of movable type printing and the availability of inexpensive books to ordinary common people. And it completely transformed the infoscape, if you will. Well, the same thing is happening again here on the internet, where the TV network news no longer tells you what you're going to think or controls the minds of America. The high ground in the war for the minds of the world is right here on the internet. Israel recognizes that now and recognizes the mistake they made planning the propaganda for the Gaza operation. They have armies of volunteers patrolling the net, hacking into websites, including ours has been under attack, going to various social sites like Reddit or news aggregators, Reddit and all these other sites, and using these automated systems to try and downvote stories critical of Israel so they fall off the main page and nobody can see them. It's a very organized propaganda effort. It shows a complete disrespect and disregard for the concept of freedom of speech. Israel's idea is you will see only what we decide you will see, and that's the way the world should be. And the only good news about this campaign is they've made it so obvious that even people who didn't want to believe this kind of stuff was going on, they're seeing it. And they're saying, wow, this is not a joke. It's not a conspiracy thing. They're really out there with their megaphone and everything, trying to shout down people who are pointing out, you know, that this war, you know, Israel broke the ceasefire. And then they started killing people, and they started starving people. And only then did Hamas fight back trying to break the blockade that was starving the Palestinian people. And that's the part of the story that Israel really thought you were never going to see, because they carried out that first attack on Election Day when they figured you were going to be looking somewhere else. And when you were not looking at Barack Obama's election anymore, the story would be gone and nobody would call attention to it anymore. Well, we found it and we called attention to it. And now the world understands. And Israel has been forced to admit they broke the ceasefire in order to justify starting this war. Now, meanwhile, Israel has announced, because of all the pending war crimes trials that everybody's talking about already, that the IDF is classifying the names and pictures of all the military commanders who were in Gaza. They're not letting any of their pictures out. They're not letting their names out, just so that if they go to other countries, they cannot be arrested and taken to the International Criminal Court in The Hague for war crimes. Tzipi Livni, apparently, may have a very hard time getting in and out of Brussels because of a push to arrest her for war crimes. Meanwhile, the United Nations, which is also saying it's going to investigate Israel for war crimes, has also called on the U.S. to prosecute George Bush and Donald Rumsfeld for the torture that we have been, having to deal with over these last several years. Anyway, that's the end of our show. And I did want to mention one more thing. We're seeing all these UN calls against Israel and UN calls for torture prosecution. So immediately the mainstream media is dredging up all these old stories about UN sex scandals. The smear job is on, people. It's the way it works. We'll be back tomorrow. Your phone calls, more news. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, and aloha, America.